This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. It is easy to write off product placement as a cheesy, distasteful form of advertising. While that's often the case, a handful of product tie-ins have gone even further to influence consumers and even make headlines, like this classic TV moment, which has been imitated and parodied ever since. And that is a clip from the 2004 episode of The Oprah Winfrey Show when the media mogul gave every single person in the audience a free car. The tie-in was featured in Ad Age's recent list of the top 10 product placements of the past 10 years. Ad Age staff writer Michael Sebastian co-wrote the article and joins us with more. Michael, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So before you did any research for this list, could you remember which kind of car Oprah gave away that day?
No, absolutely not.
I thought it was a Cadillac. It was a Pontiac.
Yeah, Pontiac. It was the G6, which I believe has been discontinued.
So why do you think that moment, if not the car, has stayed with us, while so many other product tie-ins have been forgotten almost instantly?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, first of all, it comes from Oprah Winfrey, who, you know, herself is such a force in the media and in culture. So that's an important part of it. But also, I mean, it had such legs. It moved so much. I mean, it was parodied on Saturday Night Live. I feel like, you know, there's probably a lot of people who may not have seen the original version that you just played, but they certainly saw the parody of it, or they saw some version of it that really resonated with them.
Another car-related product placement that made your list, the blockbuster Transformers films. Remind us.
Yeah, so Transformers, the franchise, had teamed up with GM, and you know, as one executive in the show business community told me that basically the first Transformers movie is just a 2-hour long commercial for the Chevy Camaro, which is a cynical but interesting way of looking at it.
Something I did not realize until I read your article, that not all product placements involve financial transactions. What's behind them?
Sure, yeah, absolutely. Often a product placement will involve a trade. We see a lot of that, as a matter of fact. So, for instance, a movie studio might need an airplane or an airport hangar or an airport area to film in. And instead of going through the whole rigmarole of figuring out how to do that, they might reach out to an airline, say an American Airlines or a Southwest Airlines, and say, hey, can we use your airplane, use your hangar, use your space in an airport? And in exchange for that, your branding can be in the movie.
I'd like to play a clip from the trailer for the 2009 film Up in the Air, starring George Clooney. He was the ultimate frequent flyer.
Last year, I spent 322 days on the road. I flew 350,000 miles. The moon is 250. All the things you probably hate about traveling are warm reminders that I am home.
Welcome back, Mr. Bingham.
Now, listeners can't see this, but may remember that trailer was plastered with American Airlines branding. We tend to think of product placement as pretty cheesy, but Up in the Air was an Oscar-winning, critically acclaimed film. How did it transcend the shill label?
Great question, and I think that it was so organic, which is a word that marketers love to use when it comes to this kind of thing. I mean, if it hadn't been an actual airline, one that exists, I mean, if they had gone ahead and made a fake airline, I think that it would have been distracting. You know, people see a movie like this that was really based in realism. I mean, Up in the Air came out at a time when people were being laid off, and it was about a layoff expert. And it would have been distracting if it hadn't been an airline that they had flown with.
On the other side of the divide, there's the 2010 made-for-TV movie called Secrets of the Mountain. Why did this one make your list?
Yeah, this is an interesting one because this was a partnership with Walmart and Procter & Gamble, and it was almost a throwback to some of the kind of soap operas that we would have seen, I mean, even going back to the 50s, 60s, something like that. And this aired on NBC, and this was designed to draw consumers to buy P&G products at Walmart. And, I mean, for their time slot, it drew a pretty good audience. And, you know, this is like considered the holy grail of branded entertainment.
So how did it come off? Was it a knock you over the head with product placement kind of movie?
You know, not as bad as one would suspect, actually. I mean, I think that, you know, there was certainly P&G products within there, but it wasn't as if it was, you know, like that scene from Wayne's World where Wayne holds up the pizza box with a grin.
Well, that is a really funny one. It's not always subtle. The Wayne's World movie was pretty hilarious in making fun of product placement while doing it overtly. And in 2012, the Colbert Report did the same thing. Here's a clip from a nearly 7-minute segment about Wheat Thins.
I would love to pour this whole box in my mouth right now. But the memo clearly states that we can't show overconsumption. That is a brand don't. You see, the serving size for Wheat Thins is 16 crackers. So as delicious as they are, I shouldn't eat more than 16. And also, if they are shown out of the box, like in a bowl, there should only be a max of 16. So remember, everyone, while Wheat Thins is, quote, a snack for anyone who is actively seeking experiences, those experiences do not include the experience of eating 17 crackers. And you know what? That is the way it should be. Because when you think about it, and they have, 16 is the perfect number of Wheat Thins to keep you on the path to and proud of doing what you love to do, no matter what that is. No matter what.
Stephen Colbert there. So, Michael Sebastian, was that a win for Wheat Thins, even though its brand strategy is clearly being made fun of?
It was definitely a win. I mean, you don't go on the Colbert Report or team up with Stephen Colbert unless you have a sense of humor, or at least think you have a sense of humor. And I think that what we saw here was, you know, something that would appeal to not only his audience, but also the next level, so to speak, of product placement, which is this whole idea of an overt wink and nod to the camera and even making fun of it. But guess what? The message got across.
Here is an item on your list that had a real functional value. Now, that was the partnership between AT&T and American Idol. Why did that? Why does that rate?
You know, that rates as maybe one of the most important product placements because it, as at least one executive in the ad industry told me, taught America how to text message. I mean, obviously, how many people text message now? Prior to that partnership, you know, it wasn't something that was ubiquitous in the way that it is today. So, I mean, that product placement and partnership caused a real kind of cultural shift. I mean, you could argue that it was going to happen anyway, but this certainly sped it along.
You write, Michael, that product placement actually saved a couple of television shows from being canceled. How did that happen?
In the case that we're talking about, it's both Chuck and Community, and teamed up with Subway, which ended up underwriting the costs of the production in exchange for some serious product placement within the two shows.
Here's a clip from the third season of Community. This is after Subway stepped in and saved the show from being canceled.
Any business operating for profit on Greendale's campus must be at least 51% owned by a registered Greendale student.
That's too bad, Dean. I don't recall seeing Subway in my premenopausal post-feminist experiential marketing class.
Actually, I'm on the wait list for the pre-men post-fem X-mark.
Who are you?
Gang, meet Greendale's newest student, Subway.
Your name is Subway.
Yep.
Okay. Pretty overt. Seems like the original idea around product placement was to integrate advertising into programming so that viewers wouldn't really notice that they were being pitched. But the trend I'm seeing is making product placement pretty obvious and pretty funny rather than, you know, the subconscious approach. Is that what you're seeing too?
To some extent. I think that you nailed the one part about kind of that sense of humor. And I think for a show like Community, the audience would have rejected it if they hadn't taken that approach. But on the other hand, another big trend that we're seeing is sort of brands working with showrunners, producers, Hollywood execs at the ground level, meaning when they're developing a series or when they're sitting down to write an episode, they're talking about not only how they can work the product into the show, but how they can work kind of the spirit of the product or the spirit of the brand into a show at the very start. Now, you won't get a lot of studios talking at length about this because I think there's a certain dark art quality to it. But at the same time, this is really kind of the emerging trend in this space.
Well, Michael Sebastian, watching the trends as a staff writer at Ad Age, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Michael co-wrote the top 10 product placements of the last 10 years list. You can see it for yourself at wordofmouthradio.org.